Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, my name is Susie Haynes, and I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram from Friday, May 26, 2023. Section A, State and Local News. Leukemia can't stop this Midland High School senior. An active and fierce competitor for the Midland High football team, LeBrian Perez never missed a practice, workout, or game. Headed into his senior season, the athlete showcased his talents during 2022 spring ball with interceptions, tackles, and more. However, everything changed one day during a weight training session. "I couldn't even describe the pain," LeBrian said. An excruciating, debilitating pain took over LeBrian's leg. After the Midland High athletic trainer couldn't find a solution, LeBrian and his mother, Amanda Jackson, went to the emergency room. Three back-to-back nights at the hospital ended with morphine shots, but Amanda knew something wasn't right. A few days later, an MRI showed the leukemia in LeBrian's blood. "I just started crying. I burst out. I thought, there's no way I have leukemia. This can't be happening to me," LeBrian admitted. "I fell to my knees," Amanda added. "Everything just came crashing down." Unlike other cancers, leukemia is categorized in phases. For LeBrian, the four phases included intense treatments, such as spinal taps and bone marrow procedures, during a 28-day Dallas hospital stay, phase 1. An array of chemotherapy treatments, phase 2. At-home self-injection chemo shots into his stomach, as well as weekly hospital visits, still in Dallas, phase 3. And lastly, remission, phase 4. The final step, a blood transplant. The donor, none other than LeBrian's little brother and Midland High School junior, Briley Perez. Yet even after everything, LeBrian, Amanda, Briley, and oldest sibling, Brianzai, remain some of the most positive and gracious people I've met to date. Turning toward his faith, LeBrian said he knows everything happens for a reason, and that God gives his hardest battles to his toughest soldiers, Amanda added. After missing most of his senior festivities, football season, prom, LeBrian gets to join his Midland High School peers Friday night, walk the stage, and receive the diploma he never gave up on. "When we talked with the doctors before my transplant, they said I'd probably not even be able to walk the stage," LeBrian said. LeBrian wasn't going to let that happen. By staying on top of his healing protocols and following doctor's orders, the Bulldog did more than enough to earn a night to just be a kid. In the fall, LeBrian will head to the South Plains to attend Lubbock Christian University. There, he will major in nursing with a plan to become a pediatric oncology nurse, following in the steps of medical professionals who became a strong support system for him through this last year. In the end, LeBrian knows he was meant to face this challenge. And for anyone going through the same thing, he says to trust your own strength. Trust God. Believe in God. Don't worry about nothing. The nurses are going to take care of you. God's going to take care of you. And just stay strong, LeBrian added. "It's scary at first, but I know I have a long life ahead of me to live." Note, due to LeBrian's diagnosis, Amanda, a single parent, was forced to quit her job in order to get him to and from Dallas. Furthermore, LeBrian wasn't able to receive any scholarships. With hospital bills, two college tuitions, and one about to enter his senior year at Midland High School, the family greatly appreciates any support. A GoFundMe page can be found. Midland Independent School District updates comments on Alamo Junior High incident by Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD board members offered statements about the Alamo Junior High incident on May 15th that put one female student in the hospital for nearly 1 week. Brian Murray wrote that Midland ISD police are working diligently to bring this case to a close, and there are many factors involved in this situation. On Wednesday, the Reporter-Telegram talked to the mother of the student who was beaten to a point that she had to stay 3 days in an ICU in Lubbock. "We are committed to being thorough with the investigation and outcomes," Murray wrote. "Our thoughts and prayers are with the student who was injured, and we remain committed to our ongoing efforts to improve the safety and security of our schools. Midland ISD is committed to the safeguarding of our students by keeping safety and security our top priority." The Reporter-Telegram sent an email to all board members when Midland ISD reported it would update its statement on Thursday. Brandon Hodges also responded, telling the Reporter-Telegram in a statement that he will ask for a total review of the parent-student handbook, code of conduct, to ensure they are sufficient for 2023. "I can only speak for myself and for District 5," Hodges wrote. "With that said, it is of my perspective, no matter how talented the staff, the greatness of curriculum, nor the modernity of facilities, it is all for naught when we don't have a positive culture throughout our facilities." MISD's responded to the mother's concern that her daughter, a 14-year-old eighth grader, would be forced to transfer to another school if she wanted to avoid being on the same campus as the person who attacked her. In this case, the incident is governed by Texas Education Code Chapter 37 and MISD Board Policies FO and FOC, MISD's Stephanie Howard wrote. "Pursuant to those legal frameworks, MISD may remove a student from campus for up to 3 days in order to conduct an investigation, and thereafter may place a student in an interim alternative education setting if the alleged conduct is found to be a violation of the student code of conduct. These campus disciplinary consequences are in addition to any measures undertaken by law enforcement. Midland ISD continues to work through our standard disciplinary protocol. Our thoughts and prayers are with the student who was injured as a result of this incident." Statements. Midland ISD is committed to the safeguarding of our students by keeping safety and security our top priority. The suspected aggressor in the incident is being disciplined according to the student code of conduct, and the MISD Police Department is working diligently to bring this case to a close. We recognize the seriousness of this matter. There are many factors involved in this situation, and we are committed to being thorough with the investigation and outcomes. Our thoughts and prayers are with the student who was injured, and we remain committed to our ongoing efforts to improve the safety and security of our schools. Brian Murray. "I can only speak for myself and for District 5. With that said, it is of my perspective, no matter how talented the staff, the greatness of curriculum, nor the modernity of the facilities, it is all for naught when we don't have a positive culture throughout our facilities. I will be asking for a total review of the parent-student handbook, code of conduct, to ensure they are sufficient for 2023. Brandon Hodges. Midland ISD is committed to ensuring the safety and security of all of our students. District and campus leaders work diligently every day to fairly and properly enforce the MISD Student Code of Conduct at each of our campuses. In this case, the incident is governed by Texas Education Code Chapter 37 and MISD Board Policies FO and FOC. Pursuant to those legal frameworks, MISD may remove a student from campus for up to 3 days in order to conduct an investigation, and thereafter may place the student in an interim alternative education setting if the alleged conduct is found to be a violation of the student code of conduct. These campus disciplinary consequences are in addition to any measures undertaken by law enforcement Midland ISD continues to work through our standard disciplinary protocol. Our thoughts and prayers are with a student who was injured as a result of this incident, Stephanie Howard. Midland College Board picks Kennedy as next president. VP of Instructional Services will follow Steve Thomas. By Ben Schaefer. The Midland College Board of Trustees unanimously selected Damon Kennedy as the sole finalist to become the fifth president of Midland College. Kennedy, Vice President of Instructional Services at the college, was one of three finalists to replace Steve Thomas, who previously said he was set to retire this August. Midland College Board Chairman Steve Kaiser said Kennedy's knowledge and experience at the institution was a major factor in the decision. "He knows this college," Kaiser said. "He doesn't need to ramp up and learn. We've got a lot of things that are on our plate right now that we just need to get right and get after. Our career and technical education program and many others. And he's on board, aware, and ready to go. And that's going to be a great asset to us. A great advantage that he really knows where we are and where we need to be." Kennedy, a former Midland College student who's been a faculty member since 2004, said he was feeling excited and anxious about the prospect of being selected as the next college president. He also said he felt the support from his friends and colleagues. "I could feel the support, the outpouring of support through this process," Kennedy said. "I'm really hopeful, more so for the institution and the community, more than myself." Kennedy said that during his time as Vice President of Instructional Services, he's been able to lead many important initiatives, like the implementation of the Pre-K Academy at Midland College. He's looking forward to taking on an elevated leadership role to better the college and community at large. Kennedy posited that his experience internally at the college and in the community was a factor in his selection. He said, although being local wasn't the sole reason he was chosen, being an internal candidate separated him from an exceptional pool of candidates. The other finalists were Tad Anglin, the president of Cisco Junior College, and Ian Rourke, vice chancellor of Workforce Development and Innovation at Pima Community College in Tucson, Arizona. Being a college president was never on Kennedy's radar when he first arrived at Midland College as a faculty member nearly 20 years ago. He said he probably wouldn't pursue a presidential position at any other college besides Midland. "I have a philosophy of leadership in higher education, and that is the people who crave it are probably not going to be your best people in a leadership position," Kennedy said. "So you look for people who come to it honestly and sincerely, and I think that's where I come from." Midland College presidents: Al G. Langford, 1969 to 1981. Jess Parrish, 1981 to 1991. David E. Daniel, 1991 to 2008. Steve Thomas, 2008 to present. Damon Kennedy bio. The following is a bio that the college released on Damon Kennedy. Damon Kennedy is Vice President of Instructional Services at Midland College. In this role, he led the successful launch of the Pre-K Academy at Midland College and accompanying baccalaureate in early childhood education, both responding to significant community need. Additionally, he led the implementation of the Concho Resources, Texas A&M University Engineering Academy, and the Dual Credit Fire Academy. He also led numerous significant instructional initiatives to improve student outcomes, leaded guiding pathways, the implementation of 8-week terms, and the creation of the Teaching and Learning Center. Kennedy previously served as Dean of Social Behavioral Sciences and Business at Midland College and taught at the university and college level for 20 years. As more than 25-year higher education professional, Kennedy has made teaching, learning, and the community his primary focus. He has been an advocate for the Midland community, families, student, faculty, and staff. Kennedy has been committed to Midland and the wider Permian Basin for more than two decades. During that time, he has successfully collaborated with taxing entities, business and industry, and philanthropic partners to enable impactful work at Midland College. He is a champion of workforce development aligned with student demand and industry need, and has emphasized the significance of dual credit opportunities for students throughout the Midland College service area. Kennedy is a mindful steward of public dollars as well as an accomplished fundraiser. He currently serves on the Permian Basin Workforce Development Board, the Education Partnership of the Permian Basin Leadership Team, and the Midland Independent School District Bond Committee. Kennedy has extensive experience with program and institutional accreditation, serving as a chair of regional accrediting committees for the Southern Association of Colleges and Schools, Commission on Colleges. He played a key role in the successful decennial reaffirmation of Midland College. Kennedy is an award-winning professor and has been honored by the National Phi Theta Kappa of the International High Honor Society as a distinguished administrator. He was also named a distinguished former Odessan by the Heritage of Odessa Foundation. A former student at Midland College, Kennedy is a lifelong West Texan. He and his wife of 27 years have two daughters studying at Texas A&M University, one pursuing a graduate degree in early childhood education curriculum and instruction with an emphasis on literacy, and the other is pursuing an undergraduate degree in philosophy with an intention to go to law school. Kennedy enjoys college sports and playing tennis and pickleball. Kennedy earned a PhD in American history from Texas Tech University. He has an MA and BA in American history from the University of Texas of the Permian Basin. Gas Prices Give Drivers Memorial Day Break by Ben Schaefer. Gas prices in Midland are $1.08 lower than they were last Memorial Day weekend, according to AAA Texas. The organization also reported Midland's gas price average is 1 cent less than the state average. The impact there is Midland was not one of the most expensive metropolitan areas in the state to buy gasoline, according to AAA Texas's weekly survey. AAA Texas listed Midland as the second highest gas price in Texas for the last 2 weeks. This week, it's outside of the top five. Midland sat at $3.12, a 1 cent increase from a week ago. Meanwhile, the state average jumped 5 cents as eight metropolitan areas reported increases of 10 cents or more. While gas prices are up slightly in Texas going into Memorial Day weekend, regular unleaded fuel remains more than a dollar cheaper compared to 1 year ago, said AAA Texas spokesperson Daniel Armbruster in the weekly report. Price fluctuations remain possible due to busy holiday demand, as this is expected to be Texas's second highest Memorial Day travel volume on record. The gap between Midland and Odessa's gas prices average remained virtually the same, as Odessa saw a 1 cent decrease to $3.03, 9 cents better than Midland's average this week. AAA Texas reported the following prices across the region, which also puts Midland as a midpoint for averages. $3.03 in Odessa, $3.10 in San Angelo, an increase of 14 cents, $3.11 in Lubbock, an increase of 8 cents, $3.12 in Midland, $3.15 in Amarillo, an increase of 5 cents, and $3.41 in El Paso, a decrease of 4 cents. The only Texas metro areas with sub-$3 gas price averages were McAllen, $2.97, Victoria, $2.98, and Brownsville-Harlingen, $2.99. AAA reported that Texas and Arkansas were the states with the second lowest gas price averages nationwide at $3.13. Mississippi was the lowest at $3. Pfluger convinced region will see non-attainment designation, by Mella McEwen. Congressman August Pfluger, whose District 11 includes the Permian Basin, warned the region is on track to receive redesignation for non-attainment for ozone under the Clean Air Act. Earlier this month, the San Angelo Republican had questioned Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Michael Regan about its energy policies, saying in a release he was disheartened that the administrator had no knowledge of the EPA's plan to redesignate the area. He also pointed out that for a year he had tried to speak with the EPA's Region 6 Administrator, Erthea Nance, who had not returned letters or at least 6 phone calls. He finally spoke to Nance and released a statement saying, "After speaking with Dr. Nance, I have reason to believe that the EPA fully intends to issue a discretionary ozone non-attainment redesignation for the Permian Basin, which would dramatically hamper production in our region." Pfluger said he pushed back on any possible designation and urged Nance and Regan to visit the Permian Basin to understand the impact of any such action on both the Permian Basin economy and national security. Dr. Nance must talk to the producers and families who have been in the industry for generations and have worked diligently to reduce pollution without the heavy hand of the federal government. I will continue fighting against this possible redesignation and any further attacks from the Biden administration against our energy industry and way of life," Pfluger said in the statement. He had similar criticism for Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm when he questioned her earlier this month. She admitted she had never been to the Permian Basin, the most prolific oil and gas production region in the nation, admitted she is not the primary energy advisor to President Biden and wasn't in the room when he made the decision to go to Saudi Arabia and beg for oil, and doesn't know how much electricity the U.S. requires or how much will be needed in the coming years, Pfluger said in describing his encounter with the secretary. "Energy security is national security," he said, "and the Permian Basin deserves a fair shake when it comes to producing energy. I'm holding the administrator and the Biden administration accountable," Pfluger concluded. Texas lawmakers recommend impeaching Attorney General Paxton, by Acacia Coronado and Jake Blyberg. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton teetered on the brink of impeachment Thursday after years of scandal, criminal charges, and corruption accusations that the state's Republican majority had largely met with silence until now. In a unanimous decision, a Republican-led House investigative committee that spent months quietly looking into Paxton recommended impeaching the state's top lawyer. The House could vote on the recommendation as soon as Friday. If it impeaches Paxton, he would be forced to leave office immediately. The move sets up what could be a remarkably sudden downfall for one of the GOP's most prominent legal combatants, who in 2020 asked the U.S. Supreme Court to overturn Joe Biden's victory. Only 2 officials in Texas's nearly 200-year history have been impeached. Paxton has been under FBI investigation for years over accusations that he used his office to help a donor and was separately indicted on securities fraud charges in 2015, but has yet to stand trial. When the 5-member committee's investigation came to light Tuesday, Paxton suggested it was a political attack by the House's liberal Republican Speaker Dade Phelan. He called for Phelan's resignation and accused him of being drunk during a marathon session last Friday. Phelan's office has brushed off the accusation as Paxton attempting to save face. One of Paxton's criminal defense attorneys, Philip Hilder, said Thursday that his client's alleged wrongdoing should be left to the courts. These matters are appropriate for resolution in the judicial system, not in a political system, Hilder told the Associated Press. Impeachment requires a majority vote of the House's 150-member House chamber, which Republicans control 85-64. It's unclear how many supporters Paxton may have in the House. Since the prospect of impeachment suddenly emerged Wednesday, none of Texas' other top Republicans have voiced support for Paxton. Committee members did not reveal details about the articles of impeachment when they voted to approve them in open session, and a copy had not been made public by Thursday evening. The timing of a vote by the House is also unclear. Representative Andrew Murr, the Republican chair of the investigative committee, said he did not have a timeline, and Phelan's office declined to comment. Unlike in Congress, impeachment in Texas requires immediate removal from office until a trial is held in the Senate. Republican Governor Greg Abbott could appoint an interim replacement. It means Paxton faces ouster at the hands of GOP lawmakers just 7 months after easily winning a third term over challengers, among them George P. Bush, who had urged voters to reject a compromised incumbent, but discovered that many didn't know about Paxton's litany of alleged misdeeds or dismissed the accusations as political attacks. Even with Monday's end of the regular session approaching, state law allows the House to keep working on impeachment proceedings. It could also call itself back into session later. The Senate has the same options. In one sense, Paxton's political peril arrived with dizzying speed. The House committee investigation came to light Tuesday, followed the next day by an extraordinary public airing of alleged criminal acts he committed as one of Texas's most powerful figures. But to Paxton detractors, who now include a widening share of his own party in the Texas Capitol, the rebuke was years in the making. In 2014, he admitted to violating Texas security laws over not registering as an investment advisor while soliciting clients. A year later, Paxton was indicted on federal security charges by a grand jury in his hometown near Dallas, where he was accused of defrauding investors in a tech startup. He has pleaded not guilty to two felony counts that carry a potential sentence of 5 to 99 years in prison. He opened a legal defense fund and accepted $100,000 from an executive whose company was under investigation by Paxton's office for Medicaid fraud. An additional $50,000 was donated by an Arizona retiree whose son Paxton later hired to a high-ranking job, but was soon fired after trying to make a point by displaying child pornography in a meeting. What has unleashed the most serious risk to Paxton is his relationship with another wealthy donor, Austin real estate developer Nate Paul. Several of Paxton's top aides in 2020 said they became concerned the attorney general was misusing the powers of his office to help Paul over unproven claims that an elaborate conspiracy to steal $200 million of his properties was afoot. The FBI searched Paul's home in 2019, but he has not been charged, and his attorneys have denied wrongdoing. Paxton also told staff members that he had an affair with a woman who, it later emerged, worked for Paul. Paxton's aides accused him of corruption and were all fired or quit after reporting him to the FBI. Four sued under Texas's whistleblower laws, accusing Paxton of wrongful retaliation, and in February agreed to settle the case for $3.3 million. But the Texas House must approve the payout, and Phelan has said he doesn't think taxpayers should foot the bill. Shortly after the settlement was reached, the House investigation into Paxton began. The probe amounted to rare scrutiny of Paxton in the state capitol, where many Republicans have long taken a muted posture about the accusations that have followed the Attorney General. Only twice has the Texas House impeached a sitting official: Governor James Ferguson in 1917 and State Judge O.P. Carrillo in 1975.
Hi, this is Denisa reading the Odessa American obituaries for Friday, May 26, 2023. Dora Dina Diana Lerma Maturano, 61, of Odessa, Texas, was called to heaven on May 15, 2023, with her loving husband, Gilbert Maturano, holding her hand as she took her last breath. Dora was born in Olmedo, Texas, to Tomas Sr. and Maria Luisa Lerma. Services will be held at Acres West 24-Hour Chapel, 8115 West University Boulevard, Odessa, Texas, on Saturday, May 27, 2023, at 10 a.m., with Pastor Marcus Zuniga officiating. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Hello, this is Denisa reading the Odessa American for Friday, May 26, 2023. AG forces city to turn over records again. Records reveal more details on terminations. The city of Odessa recently lost another legal battle with the Odessa American and was forced this week to release more details about a former city employee who plays a role in Aaron Smith's whistleblower lawsuit against the city. Smith, a former assistant city manager, was fired by the city on March 1st. At that time, Mayor Javier Hoven would only say there was an active investigation into Smith by the city. On April 20th, Smith filed a lawsuit against the city, alleging he was fired because he reported Hoven, the city council, and city employees had illegally hired T2 Professional Consulting Services and violated the Texas Open Meetings Act. According to the lawsuit, Smith claimed Human Resource Director Charles Hurst threatened and targeted him over his actions during a meeting February 27th. Smith had been summoned to Hurst's office that day because 11 days earlier, Smith had gone to the Odessa Police Department to report a city employee for tracking a female OPD officer with GPS, actions he saw as potentially criminal. On March 3rd, the Odessa American filed a Texas Public Information Act request asking for all emails, text, and memos concerning Smith's behavior, job performance, work ethic, or any human resource issues. The city fought to keep those documents secret, but on May 17th, the Texas Attorney General's office informed the city it had no legal grounds to do so. On Wednesday, the city released an unsigned investigative summary on Leonel Ibarra, a garage supervisor, who was fired the same day as Smith was for illegal harassment. They also released Ibarra's termination letter and an email sent by interim city manager Agapito Bernal to Hurst, OPD Chief Mike Gerke, City Attorney Dan Jones, and Hoven the day after Ibarra and Smith were fired. The email, without mentioning any names, reads, "In recent weeks, we have become aware of two severe incidents targeting Odessa police officers and their safety by our own department, Equipment Services. There is a semblance of corruption and a lapse of good judgment endangering our OPD officers' safety and welfare. I want to impress upon you that I take these matters very seriously. It is my understanding the actors knew where the officers resided and monitored their movements. As Mr. Hurst pointed out, information is worth money. Any efforts to impede this investigation will not be tolerated. As our officers deserve our utmost vigilance, corruption and ill behavior by anyone will not be tolerated. We have a duty to ensure our officers are not monitored and can serve our community effectively and safely. We are taking steps to protect our police officers against corruption and ill intent. According to an investigative summary about Ibarra's case, a city employee lodged a complaint against Ibarra after he learned Ibarra had used GPS to track him while he was on a work assignment in Plainview. Around the same time, it was discovered a female police officer had also been tracked by Ibarra. On February 21st, Smith provided Hearst with a copy of an OPD report on the matter. The summary stated, investigators had determined they didn't have enough evidence for a stalking charge to be filed. Whomever wrote the investigative summary stated Ibarra inappropriately used the city's AVL system to monitor the whereabouts of employees and commented to others about the addresses of female employees, gave preferential treatment to female employees, gave unwelcome hugs to female employees, and inappropriately stared at them. The writer of the summary recommended Ibarra be terminated. It is believed the second incident Bernal mentioned in his email involved Harvey Gutierrez Sr. On January 13th, the city had fired Gutierrez, an equipment services employee, for sharing pictures of an undercover police vehicle with his son, who was later arrested on suspicion of murder in an unrelated incident. STEM Academy, valedictorian, salutatorian, going for scientific careers. STEM Academy's top two graduates, Allison Barnes and Isaac Ariano, are heading into careers that could take them far. Barnes, the valedictorian, will attend Texas A&M University to study aerospace engineering, while Ariano will attend Colorado School of Mines to study computer science. On the honor roll for all 4 years of high school, Barnes would have been surprised if she wasn't valedictorian. So I wasn't super shocked. I was excited, but I did calculate my own GPA beforehand, and I also kind of knew what his was, Barnes said. Ariano has been going to school with Barnes since kindergarten. Barnes also is best friends with Permian High School valedictorian Hannah Douglas. I've known her for years. We hang out all the time. We're good friends. We go to church together. So that was kind of exciting. We always say the best thing that ever happened for our friendship was going to different schools, because we would not be friends anymore if we had to compete, Barnes said. They were both very careful with how they picked their classes to get the maximum GPA. The idea of graduating is kind of surprising to Ariano, who has been attending STEM since fifth grade. You always kind of feel like high school just keeps going, but now it's finally ending, he said. Barnes, who has been going to STEM since sixth grade, said commencement is a little surreal because she likes high school. I actually enjoy coming to school, and so graduating, it's like, oh man, this is my last student council meeting. This is my last robotics meet. It's very bittersweet because I'm glad that all of these things are like continuing to keep going, and there's always new people coming in who are going to do awesome. But it's like leaving behind my legacy, which has been interesting these last couple of weeks, Barnes said. Ariano said getting into the top 10 is dependent on what classes you take, as a lot of them are weighted differently. I guess it depends on whether your school takes the weighted or unweighted GPA, he added. Barnes said getting to the top of your class takes determination. You're not just going to waltz into being valedictorian. You have to make that your goal and then do things to pursue that, so it takes hard work, and you're going to have to skip fun stuff to study and that sort of thing, she said. Both students said they feel STEM Academy prepared them to go on to college. I talked to my cousin. She's in the engineering program at UT Tyler, and I showed her some of our engineering projects, and she was like, "Oh, this is what I'm doing in college," Barnes said. STEM middle/high school principal Cody Griffin said Ariano took engineering classes in high school, but his second pathway class was computer programming and engineering. Barnes said she's going to minor in computer science. "The 2 years of my computer science foreign language are super helpful because I already have some foundations," she added. Both also have college credits to get them started in college. Barnes has 68 and Ariano has 63. They are also looking forward to setting out on their own. "I'm pretty excited. Colorado's pretty. There's a lot of stuff to do there," Ariano said. "There are some cool research opportunities at A&M that I'm really excited about for student researchers," Barnes added. Griffin said he couldn't be more excited for Barnes and Ariano. "They are both extremely hard workers. Their performance on their SATs, scores, and PSAT were phenomenal. They worked really hard," Griffin said. Barnes said she is student council president, captain of the Inspire Award-winning robotics team, and she placed second in Texas State Science and Engineering Fair in her junior year. Ariano is doing an internship with the City of Odessa this year in the engineering department and is a member of the National Honor Society. Barnes lauded her teachers. "Nobody makes it to valedictorian and salutatorian without some awesome teachers and mentors along the way," Barnes said. IDEA Public Schools to offer free meals to all children. IDEA Public Schools Child Nutrition Program, CNP, is excited to announce they will be serving free meals during the summer to any child in the community aged 18 years and younger, beginning Tuesday, May 30th through Friday, July 21st, whether they are IDEA student or not. According to Feeding America, 1 in 6 children in the state of Texas face hunger. The free meals are part of IDEA's commitment to local communities to help promote a healthy and active lifestyle through the seamless summer meals option, a news release said. For the children who rely on school meals during the academic year, these meals offer a source of good nutrition when school is out for the long summer vacation. Children need good nutrition year-round so they can learn, grow, and succeed in life, said Fernando Aguilar, VP of Child Nutrition Program at IDEA Public Schools. With nearly 2 million food insecure children living in Texas, these healthy meals are vital to nourishing young Texans during the summer vacation. The summer meals will include breakfast and lunch and must be consumed in the cafeteria of any IDEA campus Monday through Friday. Breakfasts will be served from 7:30 a.m. to 9 a.m., and lunch will be served from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Food service will be closed on federal holidays and from July 3rd through July 7th. Families seeking more information regarding summer meals on campus may contact the cafeteria manager at any IDEA campus. If you'd like more information on IDEA Public Schools, please visit ideapublicschools.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram's oil report for Saturday, May 20th. Granite Ridge beats expectations in its first year. The story was written by Mella McEwen. A year ago, Grey Rock Investment Partners, an executive network partnering corporation, teamed up to form Granite Ridge Resources The $1.3 billion publicly traded company owns non-operated oil and gas properties across the nation's five most prolific producing basins, including the Permian. For its one-year report card, Granite Ridge reported it grew production 46% to 23,100 barrels of oil equivalent in the first quarter of 2023 from 15,800 BOE in the first quarter of 2022. Granite Ridge also reported net income of $36.9 million, or 28 cents per share, versus $32.4 million, or 24 cents per share, for the same quarter a year earlier, and deployed $126.2 million in capital during the quarter. Quote, "Our first quarter results mark a solid start to 2023, said Luke Brandenburg, President and Chief Executive Officer of Granite Ridge, in a release announcing first quarter results. Quote, "Supporting our efforts to prudently grow the business is our conservative use of leverage and well-honed acquisition strategy. This includes the development of deep local relationships that allow us to execute on a collective number of small to mid-size acquisition opportunities that result in outsized returns for our investors," end quote. Griffin Perry, co-founder and managing director of Grey Rock, said, quote, "At Granite Ridge, we're executing on our strategy of finding good opportunities. We're fortunate we've partnered with top operators," end quote. Speaking with the reported telegram by telephone from his Dallas office, Perry said first quarter production had grown higher than expected as the company participated in some significant wells. Grey Rock is a private equity firm, and Perry said private equity is seeing fewer production teams getting capital. But having less capital go around opens opportunities for his company as a non-operating participant to partner with operators. He added he's seeing more operators wanting a more sustainable company than is traditional with private equity. Quote, "They want to build a company with more life," he said. "One constraint on capital comes from the banking side," he said. "Banks, specifically regional banks, are not lending to producers," he said, cutting off a traditional source of capital. Quote, "We see an opportunity to step inside the role of the traditional private equity firm and provide our partners with a different stream of capital," he said. "There is a significant amount of capital for opportunities as long as operators drill and produce new wells," he said. The focus on returning capital to investors is also resulting in a slowdown in activity, he added. Despite the slower rate of growth in U.S. oil production, Perry noted that no other producing nation has the capability of ramping up production as the U.S. He pointed out the International Energy Agency just raised its global oil demand forecast by 200,000 barrels. Quote, "People are still flying. People are still traveling," he said.
Fingers and toes that turn blue in response to cold could be Raynaud's disease. To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach, Friday, May 26th. Dear Dr. Roach, I am an 83-year-old male. I eat a plant-based diet, and I exercise at my local YMCA at least three times a week. I'm concerned that my toes and fingers will turn blue daily in response to getting cold. My fingertips also become numb. Answer: fingers and toes that turn blue due to a change in the blood flow in the area. If an artery is blocked, a whole body part may turn blue, and unless the blood flow is quickly restored, the body part can die. Fortunately, that's not what is happening in your case. Fingers and toes that change color in response to cold temperatures do so because of Raynaud's phenomenon, which is an exaggerated response to the normal reduction of blood flow in order to conserve heat. Many people notice that the fingers will first turn white due to poor blood flow, and then blue due to loss of oxygen. Note that deoxygenated blood is red, not blue. That's a myth. Blood vessels, like veins, appear blue because the blood absorbs red light and because the difference in penetration of blue light compared to red light. When the tissue is ischemic, poor or without blood flow, there are no superficial blood-filled vessels that reflect red light, so the entire area appears blue. Numbness and tingling are common. When the changes come and go, we can be certain of the Raynaud's diagnosis. Many people with Raynaud's have it for no particular reason, but it can be found in conjunction with other medical conditions. Getting Raynaud's at age 83 as a male makes a secondary cause more likely. The list is long, but scleroderma, lupus, and cryoglobulinemia are included. It's worth a visit to your doctor for an exam and some further testing, in my opinion. Woman obsessively monitors former rival's social media. Dear Abby, for Friday, May 26th. Dear Abby, I'm a 45-year-old woman who has been dating Ben, 53, for 2 years. We have known each other for more than 20. He treats me like a queen. Prior to our dating, he had a girlfriend he used to confide in me about. I was very jealous of her. She knew we were friends, so she made a point of posting lots of pictures of their PDAs on his social media since we did not follow each other. Fast forward 2 years. Abby, I cannot stop obsessing over her. I think about her constantly and compare myself to her. I stalk her social media page. Ben has never given me a reason not to trust him, so why am I still bothered by her? She has moved on and is in another relationship. How can I finally quit obsessing about her and move forward? I don't feel this way about his other exes, but for some reason, this one gets under my skin. I don't want him to find out what I've been doing. I really need help. Any advice? Insecure in Pennsylvania. Dear Insecure, in light of the fact that your boyfriend's ex is happily in another relationship, this obsession is really a waste of your time and energy. Although you may still feel threatened, the woman is no longer your competition. Whether your issue is insecurity or lack of self-esteem, it's time to wake up and recognize that Ben chose you over her. If you can't accept that and relax, you may need to discuss it with a licensed psychotherapist for help to stop cyberstalking her. She may be a part of your boyfriend's past, but please do not continue making her part of your present. Dear Abby, we have 3 grandchildren, and we feel strongly about the importance of a college education. When the first one graduated from high school, we gave him $500 for graduation, plus an additional $1,500 to be used for college-related expenses. He had already indicated that he was enrolling in college. When the second one graduated, we gave him a $500 graduation gift. Because he had committed to joining the Navy, we assured him that he would also receive $1,500 if and when he enrolled in college. Since then, we have been accused of not respecting his career choice, showing favoritism, and other accusations too numerous to list here. Are we ogres for wanting and encouraging our grandchildren to attend college? We'd like your opinion. Well-meaning in the West. Dear well-meaning, your mistake has been not taking into consideration that your grandchildren are individuals. Your second grandson is likely to find his career path as part of his military service. One could argue that you are favoring the grandchild who is following the career path you are biased toward. And from that perspective, it does appear that you are playing favorites. You may want to rethink what you are doing. Your Navy-bound grandson may have a need for that money at some point.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.